Hello, everybody, and welcome to Absurd Hypotheticals, the show where we overthink dumb questions so you don't have to. I'm your host, Marcus Lehner, and I'm joined here today by Chris Yee and Ben Storms. Say hi, guys.
Hey, I'm Chris Yee.
Hey, I'm Ben Storms.
And I brought up my walk home from work before on the show, before with the bunnies.
Yep, creepy rabbits.
Yeah, I had a different problem the other day walking home. It wasn't bunnies, it wasn't rabbits.
Was it a bowel movement?
No, it was sprinklers. So okay. The path that I walk on, they have a bunch of sprinklers because there's like grass on either side. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like, sprinklers, sometimes they like don't go on the path and they just stay on the grass. But this one, they did a full 360 and they clearly went on like directly on the path. And it was like a bunch of them for like the whole path.
Oh no.
So I had two options. I could either go around, I could like, so the way it's set up, I would have to probably walk an extra block around and then like do it that way. And it'd probably be like another 5 minutes. I didn't want to do that.
Well, no, of course right. Not. You never actually change your path to avoid sprinklers.
Yeah. I mean, I was very clearly going to get wet, but I kept my eyes on them. And I saw like a very specific timing. I was like, there's a window that I can make it.
You played Frogger. You
saw into the matrix.
Yeah. You played Frogger with your, you know, dryness at risk, basically. Yeah.
So I went through this like minefield of sprinklers, kind of, it reminded me of like those heist movies where they're like
there's like
going through the lasers and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I could totally, this would work. I'd be great in a heist. So I went all the way through and I actually did make it through without getting wet.
Wow. Yeah. That's impressive.
So now I like want to start a heist. Want to rob like a museum or something?
Just a very, very low stakes heist.
I hope they use sprinklers for security.
Yeah.
Actually, I really like the idea of a security sprinkler. That's a very, very funny mental image. It's just constantly spraying like what they put in like the dye packs at banks.
But then you're like the museum would get all ruined.
Don't worry about that part. That's not your problem. That's the
museum. I mean, they kind of have them, Ben, because, you know, it's just not keeping out robbers. It's keeping out, you know, fire.
Oh, that's actually a very compelling argument.
Although you could hook up your home security system to your fire sprinkler alarm, and then you could just pretty easily rig up, you know, a anti-robber fire sprinkler system.
And it would be like super efficient for fires, for arsons, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the best anti-arson technology. Although I guess in theory, that should just be happening anyway. Hold on. Wait. If you have automatic sprinklers in your home that don't go off when someone tries to commit arson, you need to look at your system.
That's like the main functionality right. of that.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, your sprinklers can't tell the difference between arson and a normal fire.
Exactly. So. I mean, I'm assuming, right?
I'll be honest. I don't trust automatic sprinkler systems, like, even with, like, I wouldn't want them in my house even just for, like...
Oh, no. Of course not.
Normal things, because I just expect that to trip off accidentally, and then all my shit is ruined.
Right. I mean, there's one in my room. I don't know if it actually works or not. I don't want to test it.
Yeah, I mean, if it goes off, you're fucked. Like, yeah, your whole...
Everything's ruined.
Are they temperatures? I think they're temperature, right? Like, they have to hit a certain temperature. Not smoke detectors.
I have no idea.
I'm not sure, yeah.
Because the smoke detector in my old place, I couldn't fucking fart in the wrong room without it going off.
Right.
I mean, in all the movies, they hold a lighter up to it and that activates it. But I feel like if I just touch it, it's going to go off.
Right.
I don't want to touch it.
Maybe we should, like, stop talking about it because it's going to, like, get nervous.
It can hear.
Yeah.
It's got performance anxiety.
Yeah, what if I can't do it? I should try just to make sure.
I gotta practice.
Oh, man. Well, anyway, we are here to answer hypothetical questions. And our first question of the day is, what if the ground was made up of trampolines? Ben, you want to lead us off?
Sure. So sort of, you know, set up our sort of parameters for this. We kind of said that, you know, all ground, like inside buildings, outside buildings, everything is going to be trampolines. Walls it's like anchor points.
Yeah, it's like our standard definition of ground for all the other ground questions we've had.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, in case they haven't listened to those, basically anything that's meant to be, you know, walked on, you know, the flat part, what you think of when you think ground, what do you immediately think of?
Things
that,
you stand on.
That includes like the road and like lawns and the floor in your house and stuff like that.
We have to define what the ground is a lot on this podcast for some reason. But and the other important thing is that we had to figure out what the like area of influence for the trampoline ground was. So like, as an example, if you're on a trampoline and you can like, you know, double bounce someone, we don't want that to be just like the entirety of the trampoline, because then just nothing would ever happen. So we sort of said that like, even though this kind of breaks physics, when you're at a spot on the trampoline, your area of influence is kind of like a standard trampoline area. So you can't double bounce someone from like, you know, 20 feet away. It's kind of, right. You know, whatever, I don't know, like a, how big is a trampoline? Like 8 feet across? 10 feet across?
I found like 12 feet standard. 12 feet? For
sure. So 12 outdoors. Feet. I'll say that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I sort of looked at sort of how your daily life is going to go. And honestly, a lot of it is going to be pretty much the same. Like, there are definitely some differences. Don't get me wrong. But most of just like the activities you do are going to be relatively the same, because you're not moving around that much while you do them. But the movement is kind of where things get a little haywire. One thing that does get very different sort of early on in your day, I think showering is incredibly hazardous now. Because, like, slipping in the shower is already a problem for some, like, you know, it's not like a common problem, but it's a thing that happens. And if the shower is, you know, think about walking on a trampoline, how it's like, you know, moving underneath you. If that is then wet, I feel like that's just going to be a very dangerous situation. So I think baths are going to be very much like in style.
It'll also be, it'll do less damage when you fall, though.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. I will also say, Ben, I don't know how familiar you are with having trampolines, but if it rains and you go on a trampoline, that thing is like the slickest motherfucker you've ever seen.
We're going to loop back around to that one, too.
Well, oh, my.
To be fair, I don't know. Did we say that it was actually going to be like trampoline material?
Yeah.
That's what I assumed.
Okay, well, if it's trampoline material, then yeah, you cannot fucking shower.
At all. This ain't some bad CGI where everything's bouncy. Like,
right.
I don't know.
So otherwise, most of your getting started on your day, stuff is going to be kind of the same. One place where things get a little funky is driving. So cars are going to be different. Because cars, as you know, have suspension systems. They're designed to keep the movement of a car, you know, stable as it goes across flat ground. But the problem is, now the ground is also kind of a suspension system. So I don't know. I don't think cars have suspension anymore. Because then you're going to get into some weird, like cascading resonance scenario and just, like, flip your car anytime you try to move it. Where, like, the trampoline will bounce, and then I'll spit off the suspension, and you'll start, like, low riding, you know?
Yeah, if you're, like, going downhill, then you reach, like, the low point, isn't it going to, like, bounce you back up?
Well, not even just that. So think about braking. So when you brake, most of that kinetic energy is going down into the ground. So the trampoline is going to react.
But that's, like, horizontal movement, right?
But even still, that means it's going to sort of bounce you forward, and then as you brake, and then back once you're stopped. And beyond that, if you are, say you are driving near people and they're slamming on the brakes, they're going to be in your area of influence as you put all this kinetic energy into the ground.
Yeah, driving, like a car driving past is going to like potentially launch you.
Right.
Which makes sidewalks problematic.
Yeah, exactly. Sidewalks have to be much, much wider and
away from the street.
And like bikes, I don't think can share the road anymore.
But also just like a big truck, like just drives between you.
Oh yeah.
You could just shoot up.
Yeah. Your cars aren't super good when they're not in contact with the ground in general terms.
Right. So in general, I just don't even know like if cars can be a thing anymore. I feel like we may have to go to a more public transit system just to have fewer giant things, you know, fucking up everything around them as they roll through. Because, like, public transit is at least controllable.
Can I propose a solution?
Oh, please do.
So, people don't do this yet because, one, it's going to be it's awesome, but trampolines are limited in size. But if you have, like, infinite space on trampoline, no one thinks about horizontal movement with jumping.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you have, like a little bit of a hang glider type thing or, like, a wingsuit, ooh, and you can, like, get a little bit of glide going on your jumps, Ooh, you can probably get some idea. Good distance going.
That's cool.
This is an idea.
Probably pretty dangerous.
The jumpsuit is much... The wingsuit is much more hilarious to me, but I think way worse.
Yeah, I think it's not going to work very well. So you say it might be more dangerous, but I don't know how much more dangerous it would be than... It would
be safer than cars.
Right, yeah. So there will have to be some solution. I do like this wingsuit / hang glider idea. I don't know how practical it is, but it is very fun to imagine, like most things involving trampolines. So our next little thing I thought about, fitness. So one of the first things I thought was that people are just going to be more fit because they're going to burn a lot more calories just moving around. Then I looked up, and for a 150-pound adult, if you jump on a trampoline for 10 minutes, it apparently burns about 42 calories. I saw some things that were like propaganda from those like Sky Zone-style trampoline parks that were saying that you could burn like 1,000 calories an hour, but I also saw a bunch of stuff that was just saying that's completely wrong. So I'm going with this 42 calories thing.
I don't think you can burn 1,000 calories an hour. Yeah, like I don't if you're think running that a marathon. Works.
Yeah, no. So 10 minutes jumping on a trampoline apparently burns about 42 calories. There was some variance in numbers I was seeing, but that's, close enough. 10 minutes walking burns actually also 42 calories. So it turns out there's not really a difference there just in terms of like caloric stuff. Although one weird thing, so I did look up, the world record for trampoline bouncing, and complete grain of salt here. This is not from like Guinness. This was the most reliable one I could find. Apparently Guinness doesn't do like longest time bouncing on trampoline because I think it's just really hard to like regulate what qualifies as bouncing on a trampoline.
I found a highest, highest jump from
trampoline. Yeah, I saw Guinness. Highest and like most flips and stuff like that, but not just like length of time bouncing. The world record, according to the one that I found, was like 1 hour and 30 minutes, which seems low if you're only burning as many calories as you do walking, because I can walk longer than 1 hour and 30 minutes.
Well, I mean, it's not about how much like physical energy you're expending. I think it's your fucking legs. Your legs are going to give out, man.
I guess. Yeah.
Oh, everyone's going to have really gross and jacked up legs.
So I thought about that too. So one of the fun things I thought about is that, people's calves are just going to be excellent in general. And then one of the things, so one of my favorite like little, tidbits about like the Middle Ages was that if you were like really fat, it was assumed that you were wealthy because you could afford to eat a bunch. So now I think if you don't have really good calves, we're going to assume that you're like high class because you don't have to like ever move around or anything. Because
you can afford that hang glider.
And you can afford that sick ass hang glider. Exactly. So now looping back to something that came up earlier, injuries. So just quick aside, while looking up like injury numbers, I found the excellent Wikipedia page, Toilet Related Injuries and Deaths. I was looking for things about falling, but that came up. And the subtitles for this page are accidental injuries, injuries caused by animals, self-induced injury, exploding toilets, historical deaths, urban legends, and in fiction. Which is great, but that's entirely unrelated. I just had to share that because the fact there's a Wikipedia page for toilet-related injuries and deaths is wonderful. Apparently, globally, like 646,000 fatal falls occur per year. It's the second leading cause of unintentional death after road traffic injuries. And in the U.S., falls cause about 8 million emergency room visits per year, which is like 21.3% of all emergency room visits, which is the leading cause. And my first thought was, this is going to be better because you're going to fall and bounce. But at the same time, if you're like moving and fall and bounce, like you're going to keep bouncing. And I think you can get a lot of like twisted things and like, it's probably going to be fewer, you're going to get fewer like fractures and stuff, which is a good thing, but more like twisted ankles, like neck injuries, stuff like that from people like falling and like bouncing around weirdly.
Like bouncing into a wall.
Right, yeah. The injuries are different and probably on average.
This is the most cartoony thing to be happening all the time. Like, yeah. Oh, bounce. Oh, fuck. Boom.
Right.
Oh,
damn. So like, I think there's more, actually more injuries total, but less severe.
What would like falling downstairs be like?
I thought about just stairs in general. I think it really tricky. Falling downstairs, I think, is going to be absolutely terrifying, and you might
hilarious.
Die.
Hilarious to an observer.
The problem is that most staircases at the end have like a wall, and you're going to hit the bottom and just bounce up into that wall, which isn't great. And then finally, as Marcus brought up, weather. So yeah, so rainy days, it's going to be pretty hard to go outside just because like, yeah, slick trampolines, not good. If it's snowy or icy, I think you just cannot leave your where you live. I think you just can't. Imagine an icy trampoline. You will die.
Hmm.
Yeah,
actually, I don't think you'll be able to get going far enough to actually die. I think you will just like, no, you'll die because you'll like immediately fall down and then slide out into the middle of the road and no one will be on it. But you just won't be able to get back to anywhere that's not outside.
Yeah, I think a snow plow will definitely not work. Because if it snows, the weight of the snow is going to push all the, like, wherever the furthest parts of the trampoline is, like, down the most.
I mean,
and everything's going to be reverse hills.
Yeah, I guess so. In our situation, the trampoline is, like, indestructible. So it can't break.
Yeah,
so
it won't break.
It can't. Yeah, it won't break, but it'll deform a lot due to the weight.
Actually, hold on. If it snows, aside from the thickness, is it easier to walk around, actually?
I think so, yeah.
I think so,
yeah. You just get like a pair of snowshoes, you can walk on top.
So I guess if you have enough snow that you don't have to actually walk on the trampoline anymore, I think you're good. That's when you go do stuff.
Real estate prices in Buffalo skyrocket overnight.
Where you can almost live normally.
Well, normally for them.
Right, well, yeah, you're still in Buffalo. Hey, Buffalo, love you. I've never been to Buffalo. It's probably a terrible place. Anyway, that's basically what I have. Chris, what do you have?
So, for standard trampolines, there's usually like a weight limit. But in our little situation we've created, there is no weight limit. You can have as many people as you want. So I want to look at a situation where there are a lot of people concentrated in one area. And what I came up with was a concert, like a music concert. So the biggest concert in the history of whatever.
Concerts?
Of concerts, yeah. was Rod Stewart in 1994 at the Copacabana Beach in Rio de Janeiro. And it was 3.5 million people.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
That seems impossible. Like,
it sounds impossible, but it happened. So that's a lot of people.
I thought it could just be like Woodstock. I was going to be like, okay, I got it.
it was Rod Stewart.
By the way, that's slightly under 3.5 times the population of Rhode Island. I just Googled
all
that
concentrated
because,
on one beach.
Yep.
Now imagine if that was on a trampoline. So concerts, one of the reasons I wanted to look at concerts is because like a lot of times people, they move to the music, just like to the rhythm of the music. And there is a type of dancing called pogoing, which was popular in the 70s, which is basically just jumping up and down.
These 70s, you can't claim that as your own.
And this actually evolved into like mosh pits and stuff.
Right, I was going to say mosh pits are going to be...
very dangerous.
Yeah.
But I didn't really look at mosh pits. I just focused on pogoing because that's like the closest to jumping.
Yeah, the purest form of trampoline expression.
So if you have a song and people are jumping to the beat, they're all going to be jumping at the same rhythms. So I wanted to see like what songs would match like the natural jump of a person. So I watched a bunch of videos of people jumping on trampolines to try to find like a good average beat per minute. And I like the casual, like not going too high bounce, I found that they bounce at 110 beats per minute. And then for the higher bounces, they bounce at like 50 beats per minute. So the 50 beats per minute is kind of slow. I don't think there are really that many songs that you would like jam out to.
Yeah.
There are songs that are 50 beats per minute, but they're really slow. So I went with the...
weird about how that happens.
Yeah. So I went with the 110 beats per minute. And a few songs I found that were in that like that range are Eye of the Tiger, Another One Bites the Dust, Everybody by the Backstreet Boys, Living on a Prayer, and More Than a Feeling. So those are some pretty good songs to jam out to on a trampoline.
God, how bad is the problem of, like, if you're slightly off rhythm?
You get double bounced like crazy.
You get launched out of the venue.
I'll get to that.
Okay, cool.
Actually, I'll get to that right now.
Perfect.
Yeah, so if usually, because Ben mentioned, like, you can double bounce someone. So if, like, one person jumps ahead of the other person, then the second person will get launched. And the Guinness World Record of the highest trampoline bounce is 22 feet and 1 inches. And this actually used this technique. There were two bouncers and, like, one bouncy. So two people, like, launched the third person. And that's the technique they used. So I was thinking, if all these people are condensed into one area, this is probably going to happen a lot.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see how high you could actually launch a person. And for the amount of people, or because we restricted it to, like, a certain area of influence, it doesn't actually matter how many people are in the concert. It just matters on, like, the density of how densely they're packed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I assumed that each person would take up, like, a 2-foot by 2-foot square. It's, like, a decent estimate, I think. And I said that the area of influence was, well, a standard outdoor trampoline is, like, 12 feet in diameter, I found. So the area of influence was 113 square feet.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that means that 28 people can fit in that area. I said that the average adult body in, or I found that the average adult body in North America was around, like, 180 pounds. So that I assume that everyone's 180 pounds. So the total weight that those 28 people weigh is 5,040 pounds. So what actually causes the launch of that one person into the air? So it has to do with, like, the kinetic energy that's stored in the springs of the trampoline. And it got actually kind of complicated. It had to do with, like, oscillation and, like, spring constants.
Right.
Stuff like that. And I didn't go that in depth with it. I kind of simplified it. What I said is that all the kinetic energy from those 28 people is going to get directly transferred to that last person. I think some energy is lost in reality, but...
Yeah, I think it might be a good number, but I want to hear how high he goes.
Yeah.
So I assume that the initial jump that everyone jumps at, like their normal jump, is going to be like 4 feet off the ground. So if they're falling from 4 feet off the ground and hitting the trampoline, and one person happens to be slightly off, then that one person will launch 109 feet into the air. So just imagine everyone's jumping to, like, Living on a Prayer, and then, like, the climax of the song, one person goes launching up into the air, literally 100 feet.
Okay, so this, you can't have concerts indoors anymore, right?
People will die, yeah.
People will die outdoors too, Ben.
Well, yeah, but...
They will die outdoors as well.
I guess that's true. People are just going to die at concerts now.
Yeah. So, yeah. Concerts will be dangerous. I didn't really look into it, but, like, crowd surfing will be interesting.
Red impossible.
Yeah, probably impossible. But yeah, that's basically what I found. What did you do, Marcus?
So it's kind of funny you're talking about the bouncing math, because I was trying to go the same way at an even bigger scale. So I wanted to find out that if a meteor hit the Earth, what would happen? Specifically, how high the meteor that killed the dinosaurs could have thrown a T-Rex. I wanted to find out if you could send a whole bunch of T-Rexes into space.
Probably. I'm guessing the answer is yes.
So, yeah. The energy-wise, yeah, definitely it could have happened. But because of how this indestructible trampoline is really a physics-breaking thing, like, there isn't a max capacity for deformation and everything, it really didn't work. So I tried for a while, but physics was too broken to make physics happen and numbers to come out.
Right.
So... sadly, there are no space T-Rexes. So what I did was, in good old internet fashion, I decided to do a top three winners and losers of the trampoline ground.
Yay!
So who's best off and who is worst off? Do you guys want to start with the winners or the losers?
Let's start with losers and end on a high note.
Yeah, let's start with losers.
Okay. So my first one I have listed here was actually race car drivers. But Ben already talked about how cars don't work.
Yep.
But as he was talking about, also what Ben was talking about was all the, you know, how you get such strong calves.
Mm-hmm.
Which got me thinking, actually, one of the biggest losers is got to be cows. Because of animals that are not going to fare well on a bouncy ground, cows have got to be near the top of the list.
I feel like anything, actually just anything that moves by like galloping, right? That doesn't work like, anymore, right?
Yeah.
Like cow tipping's a thing, right? Like cows are just going to be tipped all the time.
They'll just bounce right back up.
They're not going to, though. Cows are not going to know what the fuck is going on.
What happens if you... Wait, hold on. What happens if you drop a cat on a trampoline floor?
I think you get scratched, I think is what happens.
It attacks you.
Well, yeah. But so, okay. So, like, initially it lands on its feet, but then what happens?
I don't think cats weigh enough. I think cat would just be like, nothing.
I feel like a cat would, like, cling to it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They would definitely hold on to it. Cats will become the new, like... They'll become immobile.
Right. Yeah.
Does anyone have it worse than cows?
Cows are pretty
actually,
bad.
The tortoise has to have it the worst.
I mean, is a tortoise affected? I feel like any light animal isn't really affected. It's the heavier animals.
Well, except that if something goes by them, they get flipped on their back, and now they have just no shot.
On a perfectly flat ground, they can maybe have a chance of rolling themselves over, but if they get into that little divot of their weight, they're never flipping over.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my first loser. Cross out race car drivers, write cows, done, in the book.
Good substitute.
Second one, waiters and waitresses.
Oh, no.
Because, yeah, you're talking about how, like, your daily life's not affected too much, but if your daily life is carrying food and drinks that in any kind of balanced fashion...
I've always been really impressed with their balance.
Yeah, I'm going to be even more impressed now.
They can do it with roller skates. So maybe they can do a trampoline.
It worse.
We should start a trampoline restaurant.
Oh, I thought you were going to say start a trampoline roller skate park.
That too.
Make everyone sign eight waivers.
I think I want to clarify for Chris. I don't think he was saying delivering food on a trampoline is easier with roller skates. I think he was saying waiters and waitresses at places like Sonic already do it on roller skates. And therefore, trampolines aren't that much harder.
That makes
but I think they really
much
are.
More sense.
Yeah, trampolines are definitely harder.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, rollerblades, like, at least give you, like, that smooth... There's no up-down in rollerblades. It's really on the trampoline that you're going to have super big problems. You have to just go, like, super slow, which isn't super conducive to your job as a waiter waitress.
Maybe just restaurants no longer worry about the appearance of your food. You just get it in, like, a sealed Tupperware container that you open up.
It's like, I'll have the soup. You fucker.
All salads are toss salads.
All soups suddenly now cost $400,
right.
So people don't order them.
Right. Actually, they're just kind of like a thermos. Boom, done.
All right, and now for my last loser, sumo wrestlers. And I'm going to call the bowl problem, because it's already really hard to get a sumo wrestler out of a very flat ring. It's going to be impossible to get him to go uphill.
Right.
So I think sumo wrestling is just kind of like now an two, like, heavy people
like
being uncomfortably close to each other in the
really
middle of a bowl.
Funny to watch, though.
Yeah, I really want to see a, you know, 400-whatever-pound man get thrown onto his back and then just, like, go bouncing and sprawling away. That would be incredible.
Well, I think what Marcus is saying is that the middle will deform enough that they'll both be just, like, forced into each other. And they'll just be pressed into each other for the entire match.
I guess that's true, yeah. Oh, man. Sumo hugging.
Sumo wrestlers are going to have it rough, I will admit. But let's jump into our winners then right away. But I think you'll be able to appreciate this, because this is the obvious one. Basketball
players.
Yes,
I thought about this.
Basketball becomes just a much better sport.
I mean, people because, do this, right?
Yeah, did you know that actually there was televised, like, trampoline basketball back some point? I didn't want to say, like, late 90s or early 2000s. I cannot remember what it was.
Was it
called,
really?
Like, Slam Ball or something?
Oh, that's such a good name. Come on and slam, and welcome to the jam.
It's such a, like, ESPN, yep. Like, 5...
Yeah, it's called Slam Ball. There are four trampolines in front of each net, and boards around the court edge so you can't like fly out, apparently. Yeah. So they were aired, of course, they were aired on Spike TV for two seasons in 2002 and 2003.
That's very much Spike TV.
Yep.
Okay. Here's my thought though. I think you have the trampolines, but you also double the height of the hoop. So you have to fucking slam jam.
Ooh.
Like just have it like this aerobatic display. Acrobatic.
What would like dribbling be?
Gone. Just jumps. It's all dunks and jumps.
Okay.
Second winner. Ben talked a bunch about injuries, so I almost ditched this, but he didn't cover the person who's actually what doctor is going to make the most money, and it is the Band-Aid salesman, because people are going to have just perpetually skinned elbows and knees.
I like that you called a Band-Aid salesman a doctor.
Well, Band-Aid salesman isn't a real job title, so I was like, where do you get your Band-Aids from? I guess CVS. I guess CVS makes out, but I don't want CVS to make out,
Mr.
you know.
Band-Aid MD.
Yes, hi, I'm Mr. Band-Aid.
Hi, I'm Dr. Excuse me, Dr. Band-Aid. I went to Band-Aid College for 6 years.
I admit, there is going to be some competition with knee pad and elbow pad salesmen.
Ooh, true.
Because once you go through a bunch of Band-Aids or just...
Yeah, you're going to learn.
Like, wow, I'm very tired of having no skin on my on right. my joints.
Actually, does everyone just wear like motorcycle gear all the time to avoid like skin stuff? That's an option.
I spend most of my life trying to avoid skin stuff.
Yeah.
And then my last winner I got on my list here is firefighters.
Huh.
Because I think half of a firefighter's job at least is either like getting people to come down from or going up to get people from high places.
This is true.
Cats too.
So like, you go with a fire truck. You don't have to go with a fire truck. You can just see a fire and someone's like, help me, I'm on the second floor. And you'd be like, jump. Just fucking, you don't even have to trust fall, just jump. I don't even need to bring any of the equipment. Just do it. And like, I think it makes getting a cat out of a tree easier too, because like, to get a cat out of the tree, you do have to worry about the cat's safety. Like,
because the cat's not going to jump.
Yeah, right. The cat's not going to jump or not want to jump. And if you do something to directly make the cat fall, you could injure them because they fall 10 feet. So you have to like pick up the cat and carry him down, which is really not a great proposition if you know how cats work.
Right.
But now you don't really have to worry about the cat falling down because he's going to be fine if he lands on the trampoline. So just like, shoot him with the fire hose? I don't know. Like, knock the cat out of the tree. Or maybe, you know, scare the cat out. Like maybe not directly hit the cat with the fire hose, unless there's, like, a low setting. Because those do a lot of damage.
I don't think there's a low setting on fire hoses. There's, like, a knob you can...
It has a put-out fire setting
yep.
and an off setting.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just got off and oh fuck, there's a fire. But yeah, that's my top three winners and losers of the trampoline ground.
Nice, I like it.
I like it, yep.
And I think with that, we can move on to our regularly scheduled break.
This week's ads have gone missing. Instead, chill to these sweet smooth tunes.
I've been feeling so down, yeah. Can you tell me why? Can you tell me why I'm down, yeah? No friends of mine around, yeah. Now I'm thinking I might have caught the June blues, yeah. I wanna drown myself inside the juice, yeah. You know I keep on running from the
breaking news got me breaking, 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 breaking. I was present, hopeless, praying, 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 praying. Struck down at 20, plenty left to put behind you. You ain't peaked, never speaking, now they speaking about you, leave it alone. Hope you grinning while you watch your bros on some soulful sunny shit to brighten up a wounded soul. Honest, you the penny, pick it up like Chevy, New Age Machiavelli, disagree, don't tell me, now you in infinity, we 98, trust that he be good. On the ball like BB, don't make no mistakes, got the faith. The 18 just not gon' be the same. Finna be down generations, not gon' be in vain. Too young, why you gotta go, why you gotta go? I just wanna know, I just wanna know now. Too numb, crying, getting old, crying, getting old. Hope you free your soul, hope you free your soul. I might have caught the June blues. Yeah, I wanna drown myself inside the juice. Yeah, you know I keep on running from. You get used to, yeah. Go blame the drum blows, yeah. It's just the drum blows, yeah. Walk around like who you, yeah. Just some you get used to, yeah.
Welcome back, everybody. We are going to dive right into the second question of today, which is, what if the Earth was a cube? So for this one, we decided to make a cube that is the same volume and mass of the Earth, and for the implications of what that means, I'm going to let Ben start us off.
All right. So first off, I just want to briefly say that, so we get into some sort of wild stuff. This gets, I think, into one of the most like buck wild things we've ever done.
Yeah,
honestly,
this is probably one of our most intensive questions.
Yeah. Things get a little, more so, like, little crazy.
Yeah. Mostly just because like the science like just works behind it all.
Right.
Like,
right.
You can
exactly.
Figure out what happens and it is wild.
Yeah. So sort of, to sort of get you on the same page, like, mentally as us. Well, I don't know if you'll be on the same page mentally as us on anything, but the same idea as us. What we're looking at here is basically a cube that is about 6,300 miles per edge, you know. So 6,300 by 6,300 by 6,300, roughly. And then, sort of to start, I don't think you understand sort of the gravity of the situation, by which I mean you don't understand how gravity works in this situation. I was very happy when I thought of that joke. Anyway,
you've been waiting
this
whole time.
That's a prep joke? I thought you just did that.
Nope, that is a joke that I prepped and have written out in my notes.
I
that
thought
makes
you just thought of that and then said it and then were actually secretly ashamed inside for a second but decided to keep going.
Nope, I intentionally did that to everyone. Anyway, so sort of, you know, when you live on a sphere, as we do, gravity is sort of constant, you know. You are always roughly the same distance from the center of mass of the Earth, on our normal spherical Earth. There are differences in gravity on Earth, but the range of altitudes you can, or like the range of, not really altitudes, the range of distances you can be at from the center of the Earth isn't that big, it's just a few miles. So the you know, you express gravity, or at least we express gravity in terms of G's, which is the, you know, ratio to our regular Earth gravity. The range on Earth is only like 0.7% from the lowest to the highest. So a little variation, not too much. On the cube, the variance and like the distance from the center is much, much higher. So relative to like the center of one of the faces of the cube, if you were at the center of one of the edges, you are 1,300 miles further from the center. And if you're on one of the corners, you're 2,300 miles further from the center. What that means is that effectively, if you're at the center of one of the cube faces, gravity is about the same as Earth's gravity. If you're at the center of an edge, it's about 0.85 what Earth's gravity is. If you're at a corner, it's about 0.646 Earth's gravity. I mean, just sort of for reference, the moon is like 0.166, so we're not talking like moon gravity, but definitely noticeable.
There's definitely a difference.
Yeah, certainly a difference.
Like,
and like,
you ever like feel lighter after you take a big dump? It's like that, but
well, so like the example,
0.6 is like you just took, you take like 30 of those in a row. You just keep multiplying that feeling.
The example given is that if you weigh 200 pounds, like on Earth, if you went to the corner, you would weigh about 120. So it's a
great
big difference.
Weight loss program.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other interesting thing is that, so once again, when you're on a spherical planet like ours, the center of gravity is always directly beneath you. But on a cube, as you move away from the center of one of the faces, that's not true, because the center of gravity is going to be further from you as you move. So even though you are technically walking, you know, on a straight, flat piece of ground, it's going to feel like you're walking basically up the inside of a bowl, because the center of gravity is going to be further and further from you.
Because it's not perpendicular to the surface.
Exactly, yeah. So even though you will be able to theoretically, you know, just like see straight flat ground in front of you, it's going to feel like you're moving up a hill. But then things actually get even a little bit weirder than that. Because you know, we sort of talk about how gravity isn't constant in the way you sort of expect it to be. Gravity also isn't going to be constant in an entirely different way that you would not expect, which is that gravity can't work the same. It doesn't work the same on a non-spherical object. Because of the way the mass of the object is distributed. So once again, you know, if you're on a sphere, all the mass of the object is kind of below you at all times, basically. When you walk, you know, I'll say up the side of a cube like this, the center of gravity is not necessarily going to be the way that the force of gravity pulls you because of the way the mass, because there's more mass below you as opposed to towards the center of gravity, if that makes sense. So what actually winds up happening is that it actually isn't as severe of a slope feel as it would be if that didn't happen. It's up to about a 14 degree difference between, basically what's going to happen is depending on where you are on the cube, the force of gravity is going to actually move more towards being straight down, up to about 14 degrees. So it's not as much of a bowl as it could be. It looks really weird if you like graph it. I saw a graph of it. It's very strange, but basically gravity works really weirdly.
The way I think about it is if you are standing on top of a corner, gravity for you straight down, you're going to be basically looking at 345 degree slopes in any direction. It's like you're standing at the tip of a mountain. And so that would mean that gravity is 45 degrees off of the flat face.
Mm-hmm.
And at the center of it, it's perpendicular. And so in between 0 and 45 degrees, so what happens as you walk towards the edge of the cube.
Yeah. So how does that actually affect us aside from just, you know, being weird? So the big thing is that it's going to affect how the fluids that affect our lives act, most notably, you know, water and atmosphere. So those are both going to kind of pool at the center of the cube faces. So what's going to basically happen is you're going to have a big ocean with about a 695 mile radius. And then in sort of a concentric circle around that, an atmosphere bubble that's like 1700 miles. And everything outside of that is basically space. It is basically space is wrong. It is space. That is space. So you actually can't just walk to like the edge of the cube or the corner of the cube because you will die. But
you could theoretically go for a spacewalk.
You could in your own backyard.
Our space program would be easier, right?
Right. The space program is just like a hike.
Yeah.
the space getaway weekend.
And then, so one really fun sort of thing that comes out of that I realized is that, I sort of assumed that, you know, the edges of the planet would wear down, but they really won't because there's not really any erosion because there's no anything. It's space. So the edges are going to be just like, you know, barring, you know, getting hit by something, just a straight edge, like eternally, which is buck wild. And then the other big impact of the atmosphere thing particularly that has a very large impact is that So technically, really, each face of the planet is basically its own, like, how do I say, like, ecologically, its own planet. There's zero link with regards to, like, evolution or anything between all of them. So beyond even just, like climate-wise, biomes or anything, like, ignore all of that. Just, like, evolution of life is entirely different on every face of the cube planet. Because
So it's going to be basically like six different planets.
Exactly, yeah. Which is, once again, just buck wild. And most likely, life probably would not be able to evolve under these circumstances. But if it did on two of the faces, they would be entirely different. Like, entirely unrelated from each other, which is, once again, just absolutely buck wild.
That's a pretty awesome fact.
It is, right? Yeah, like, but I mean, it makes sense, because, you know, once again, it's everything that's not in these bubbles is space, and things can't move through space. That's a pretty important part of, like, science.
Also, like, what are, like, you know how, like, it took our society a long time to figure out that the Earth wasn't flat?
Right. Oh, man.
What the fuck are these people going to think? Because they're like, you can clearly see it's flat.
Right, exactly.
But it turned, it's uphill. All of it's uphill.
Well, and just like, the atmosphere is going to keep thinning. So before you reach the end, you're just going to like, stop being able to breathe. So what's that going to do to your worldview?
Yeah. It just gets cold and you die.
Right. So that's basically what I have. Chris, what did you do?
Yeah, so you looked at gravity and stuff. I looked at the way that the sun affects the Earth, if the Earth was cube. Because the Earth rotates and it revolves around the sun. So the sun hits the Earth in different ways. And with our sphere Earth, currently we have 38 different time zones. So that's like 24 time zones for every hour. And then there are like a few in there that are like 15 minutes away from each other for some reason.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know why we need so many time zones, but
no one does.
We have a lot. But if the Earth was cube, so basically if the Earth is rotating, and the sun hits a face of the cube, it's going to hit the face all at once, basically instantaneously. So each face of the cube is going to be its own time zone. And they're each going to be 6 hours apart from each other. And that's for the entire face. So
that's so much easier to understand.
Yeah. And I guess actually, like, time is almost just like day and night. Like, there's no, like, sunset really anymore because it's just kind of like...
There might be some, I guess, like, there's gradual...
Sunset, yeah.
Because, like, half of the sun might be covered.
Yeah.
And then for the top face and the bottom face... because it's still revolving around the sun for like 6 months of the year, the top face is going to be just completely night, and for the other six, it's going to be day. So it's going to be a 6 month day night cycle for the top and bottom faces,
which is kind of just what we have at our extreme poles already, but for
the entire sixth of the planet.
Yeah.
Right.
And then next I looked at the way that the seasons are affected, because the Earth is at like, it's at a tilt, it's at a 23 degree tilt, and we said that it keeps that tilt. So there's a misconception about why the seasons actually happen. A lot of people say that's because the Earth tilt it puts parts of the Earth closer to the sun, but it has nothing to do with distance to the sun. Maybe that's like, that might be a little bit of it. That might be like a small factor, but the main factor is the angle that the sunlight hits the Earth at.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for an example, if you hold a flashlight and you just like hold it straight down to the ground, that concentrates more energy than if you angled the flashlight a little bit, then that same amount of energy is spread out over a wider area. So each spot gets hit by less energy. So that the same thing happens with the Earth. So our spherical Earth, the equator, gets hit directly by sunlight at like a perpendicular or almost perpendicular angle. So it gets the most energy, and then the poles get like angled sunlight, so they're colder. So if all the faces,
So if it was cubed and all the faces were the same angle away from the sun, then the entire face would be hit by the same amount of energy. So basically, the four outside faces would just be the same climate as the equator, and then the top and bottom would be the same as the poles. And there wouldn't really be that much variation throughout the year. So I told that to Ben, and Ben told me something that I didn't really consider. He mentioned water and air currents. So in this situation, as Ben mentioned, each face is separate from each other. So there's no connection between all the faces, which means that the water mass and atmosphere mass, they're all separate on each face, and there's no transfer of heat from them to the other faces.
Right.
So like on our Earth now, like the cold waters from the poles transfer over to the like the equator area, and it kind of evens out. That's not going to happen. All the outside faces are going to get warmer, and the top and bottom are going to stay cold. There's not going to be that equalization effect. And then another thing I found with relation to the climate is because the atmosphere is all gathered into one like dome at the center of each face, it's going to be more dense, so it's going to have a higher pressure. And we found that the pressure of the atmosphere is actually 3.5 atmospheres, so 3.5 times our atmosphere. And according to, so I found a law of physics, and the name is kind of funny, so I just want to warn you ahead of time. you're probably going to laugh. But the law is called Gay-Lussac's Law. And this law basically just says that the pressure and temperature of gas is related. So if you increase the pressure of a gas, then the temperature will increase.
Right.
So with our new atmospheric pressure, that means our temperature is going to raise by about 150 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, that's not good. So that's going to be at like the center of each face. But then as you radiate outward towards like the outer parts of the dome, the atmosphere dome, it will get cooler because it gets less dense as you go outwards. So I think the outside faces, at least in the center of the outside faces, you're not going to be able to live. But the top and bottom, you might be able to live because they're cold normally just based on the angle of the sun, but the pressure makes them kind of livable, right?
Well, I can tell you more about that because so I was covering where you could live on the Earth cube planet. So basically what you need is obviously land and atmosphere is the basics that I'm starting with. But just to set the stage one more time, we have our cube, and in the center of each cube, there is an ocean, which is 1,300 miles in diameter. And then there is a sphere on top of that, a dome of atmosphere, which is going to be 3,400 miles in diameter. So that gives us basically a band of 1,000 miles around the ocean that has both land and atmosphere. Unfortunately, our atmosphere isn't just a wonderful safe bubble everywhere that it touches. as Chris was mentioning, because of this bowl effect that gravity has on this cube shape, the atmosphere will be 3.5, the air pressure will be 3.5 times more than that of regular Earth. So my first question is can we handle that? And so the average human can withstand up to 70 atmospheres of pressure at one time.
Oh, wow.
Wait, that's...
that's a lot.
Higher than I expected.
Which is great.
Well, no, yeah, that's good news.
But not long term.
Oh, okay.
But not long term.
That makes more sense.
So the problem doesn't actually, you know, it's not that much pressure. Like, we're not going to get crushed into a tiny ball. The problem lies in our breathing. So our lungs rely on the pressure difference between the lungs themselves and the air in order to transfer oxygen. And the ability of them to do that is based on the air pressure. And at any air pressures higher than 2.5, that process stops functioning. And on the reverse, also anything less than half an atmosphere of pressure is no good. So we can only survive between 0.5 and 2.5 atmospheres long term. The atmospheric pressure is based on basically how much the atmosphere pressure is equivalent to how much weight of air is above you. So if you just take a column of where you're standing and just shoot it all the way up to space and weighed all the air that was on top of you, that would give you your atmospheric pressure. So in order to reduce the amount of weight, we have to start going up. And because of the weird way that gravity works, gravity's still working as a circle, more or less, on our cube. So if we start going towards the outside of our cube, we are actually have less air on top of us. So doing all sorts of crazy math. On cube Earth, you could survive at quote-unquote elevations between 3 and 12% of the height of the atmosphere, assuming that the concentration is about the same amount on Earth. I actually found it interesting that 80% of the mass of our atmosphere is in the bottom, like, 10% of the height. So, like, our little, the troposphere where we live and breathe is, like, most of the mass, and then, like, above that, there's basically nothing.
Yeah, I think I learned that in one of our previous questions.
So, I got to do some more math. I got to do some, break out the old trigonometry. And with our weird ball gravity, we basically get a ring that is between 28 and 121 miles from the edge of the ocean. So basically, it's like 700, the inner diameter, 700 miles, and then the outer one, 100 more than that. So we basically just have a 100-mile band in which we can live.
That's not too bad.
It's a lot smaller than what we got now, I'll say that.
Given the circumstances, it's not too bad.
That is true. The fact that there is any livable, or theoretically kind of livable, space.
And what's nice too, because this is where the atmospheric pressure is normalized, it's actually, the temperatures should be reasonable.
Should be normal. It should be what our equator temperature is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's nice is actually the ocean will be able to absorb a lot of that extra heat, so I'm not sure, I don't think too much will transfer away from it.
Mm.
Some slight annoyances. Going back to gravity, you will feel like you are about a 9 to 10 degree angle at all times living in this ring, which I guess we can, like, you know...
You can build platforms terraform. And stuff.
Yeah, you build platforms and stuff to make it like that, but...
Congratulations, you live in the Leaning Tower of Pisa now.
And I think you like, as far as, like, resources go, you can still go to the ocean. Like, 3.5 atmospheres won't kill you. You can have a respirator and, you know... I guess you could kind of just, like, go scuba-ing to the beach, like, before you even hit the water. So you kind of scuba gear up and you can go. You're only 30 miles away.
I mean, we do need a water source.
Right.
I mean, the ocean usually isn't a water source, but...
I mean, we should still get weather from the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. It'll still rain.
In our band. Yeah. So I don't think there's anything that actually just straight disqualifies us from being able to live in this nice, safe band,
except
on each,
like,
of the four faces.
Overpopulation.
Right.
Yeah. Well, overpopulation is a self-solving problem.
Conveniently enough.
Cruelly enough, it is. But one other cool thing that is kind of an aside to all this, talking about going to the ocean, because we're basically in a bowl, and I can't stress this enough how weird this is, you are on a flat surface, but you are in a bowl.
Right.
Like, it is better to think of everything as a bowl. That's just
but not
happens to look flat.
Yeah.
It's going to be super trippy.
Yeah.
And because the ocean is pooled all in the center of this bowl, it's actually a lot deeper than our regular ocean that is spread very thinly across our whole sphere. Let me put it this way. The current ocean depth is about 2 miles. The sphere cube ocean is 74 miles deep. So it is over 35 times deeper than our ocean. And that means the pressure at the bottom is really, really a lot. Specifically, it's equal to the weight of 74 miles of water that
right.
sits on top of it.
Conveniently
so,
enough.
It brings it up to 23 million pounds per square foot. So my question was, what happens to water at this pressure? So I was thinking, this is like kind of like water, I didn't think like crushed, but it actually, it turns it into ice, but not just regular ice. Did you guys know there are 18 types of ice?
I knew there were multiple types of ice. I don't know if I knew the exact number.
Cherry flavor, green apple, blue raspberry.
So, like, ice forms, you know, the water gets cold, and then, you know, the molecules rearrange and make that, like, pattern that ice is.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't make that pattern. So, because it's being forced together by pressure, it makes an entirely different pattern called type 6 ice, which just sounds super cool to me.
Right.
Which, according to Wikipedia, is a tetragonal crystalline phase. So you basically turn the bottom of the ocean into crystal, which I just think is super duper cool.
It's pretty awesome.
Is this crystal valuable enough to, like, mine?
Well, let me tell you what is not going to survive 74 miles of ocean. A submarine.
Also, I'm assuming that if you took it back up out, it would just turn back into water.
It'd revert back, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's not going to stay ice does. Down where it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, I wish I could show you this chart through the microphone, but like there's this whole phase diagram where it's just like a bunch of it is like water vapor, and then like a whole another bunch of it is liquid water, and then like the left half is regular ice. And then the top where like the super high pressures are, it just like gets subdivided into a million different types of ice. And I'm like, this is very it's just wild to me.
How did we figure this out?
Science has just, like, made all the different ices. I don't know.
I guess you can just compress things enough. Like, yeah. You could, because they have a methodology of how to make the ice. Like, they show, like, take water to this temperature and then compress it.
Mm-hmm.
But who the hell knows? But, yeah, so you could barely live on the Q planet.
Something I actually just thought about that I literally thought about while you were describing this. So, one actually nice thing about Q planet, I'm assuming navigation would be much easier. Because you will always know the direction of the nearest edge.
Oh yeah. That's true. It'll be very obvious.
Yeah, I don't know how you figure out like what direction you are from the center, but assuming you know like which, you know, quadrant of the planet or, you know, the face you're on, you always know which way is which is cool.
I mean, yeah, the sun still rises in the east, so you're going to be able to tell that way.
So yeah, so you will always, you don't need a compass anymore.
The oceans will, because the temperature rise at the center of the faces, the oceans will probably boil at the surface.
That's cool.
Ooh.
So, boily ocean and crystal ocean at the bottom.
Well, could the ocean absorb enough heat, like, transfer enough heat downwards? I guess it doesn't really work that way long term.
That's a pretty deep ocean. Yeah, I don't know if I actually, I don't know.
I like the, so we have a boiling ocean with, like, a super high air pressure. Then we have a slight survival band. And then we basically have the spacewalk for a while. And then we just have basically 8 space mountains.
Right.
Disney World, get on that.
Disney World, octagonal space mountain, get on it. Oh, man, that's super cool. We should do another gravity question next week.
No, I don't want to think about gravity anymore.
Too bad, we're doing it. Because next week, our questions are, what if gravity had no effect on you? And what if all animals were as smart as humans? If you have any questions, comments, or your own hypothetical idea you want us to answer, let us know. You can reach us by email at absurdhypotheticals@gmail.com, send us a tweet at absurdhype, that's H-Y-P-E hype, visit our website, www.nerdchomp.com/absurdhypotheticals, and if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps out the show and lets us keep making it for you.